Not ready? Too bad. Head back, face forward, and hold on like you mean it.
Hello and welcome to Review Time's Theme Parkcast. This is a weekly show where we discuss all the ins and outs of attractions and theme parks from around the world. My name is Dominic, and today I will be your host as we explore the world of Test Track, an exciting journey that originally explores how cars were tested, but now explores how scientists wish cars were tested. Joining me today is the same person who joins me every week, the man whose brain goes from 0 to 100 when theme parks are mentioned anywhere around him, only to have it crash when somebody mentions that the Utilidors are at Disneyland and not Disney World. It's Luke Carroll.
I'm waiting for the day when it's like, joining me today is Vladislav Pemetri, and we just never mention the other person again. Just, you know, it's some absurd person we've never heard of. The other person, it's just they've dropped off the face of the earth.
It's just, yeah, we always introduce them as if they're like a rotating roster, and we've just currently only got two people. The other thing I want to point out, the reason why sense. I mentioned that, you know, when you're listening to like another podcast or something, people who aren't super familiar with theme parks, and then when they're like, you know, Disneyland, they've got the tunnels under them. And it's like, it's at Disney World, you sillies.
Sometimes I'll be like listening to things and I'll be like in my mind like, oh, if I was on the show I would have corrected them already, or if I was on the show I would have answered. Like someone will ask a question and it will kind of go around them all like, I'm not sure about that, and it's like, I know, just invite any Disney theme park podcast. I don't necessarily want to be on as a guest. I don't have to be there. Just get me on. I'll sit quietly in the background of the episode. But anytime someone has a question, I'll just be the Google. You don't need to type it. Just go to me. Luke, how much space they got backstage at Galaxy's Edge? Oh, well, they've still got the space for the, you know, maybe one major attraction, and the dinner theater is still available. Oh, thanks,
they
Luke.
Have exactly anyway, 364 square feet. It was actually, I was listening to a podcast, one that I listen to every week, No Such Thing as a Fish, where they had Tom Scott on there, and they were talking about Walt Disney World, and they're like, oh, all of the bins have these suction things in it. And Tom chimes in, he's like, look, I'm going to stop you because I've dealt with Disney fans before and they're ravenous. And he's like, no, all of the bins don't have vacuums under them. And I respect that. I do think as well, sometimes we can get a little bit caught up in our knowledge.
You don't spend 8 hours a day researching Disney theme parks? What do you do? Have a real job?
Some of us can't afford these luxuries, Luke. Some of us have to work still.
But I think the thing for me is the reason that I would say we're kind of so deep in theme parks and theme park knowledge, especially for myself, for the reason that we don't get to go to the big theme parks that often.
Yeah.
So you'd bide your time between visits, just, you know, researching and looking things up. But it gets to the stage where you've looked at all the surface level stuff. So you keep going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And eventually you open up your own YouTube channel where you talk about things that have maybe one piece of concept art, a 20-minute video. There you go.
Hey, look, you know, we do what we can with what we have. The other thing I find as well is there's two sort of massive Disney fanatics, or theme park fanatics. There's us, who are the people who are on the outside looking in. And then there are people who are on the inside who are just a whole nother level. It's like, you know,
if you're there every day, you notice the tiniest, minutest thing. Like, well, they removed this tree today, and that removes the shading at 4:03 p.m. that used to hit me outside Innoventions West. And now where am I meant to go?
Even the like workers, the people who work for Disney or work closely with Disney, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, I can definitely tell you about that time that Bob Iger came into the office and he just, you know, dropped his pants and ran around for a bit and then did the Macarena. That was an
Which
interesting
time?
Tuesday. Happens usually once a week.
So, just another Tuesday.
But this week we're talking about an attraction that we've both experienced We usually Well, I've experienced both iterations of this.
Yeah. I've never experienced 1.0. I've only experienced what colloquially I like to call Tron Track.
Yeah. So we're talking about but Test Track.
Yeah, I know of the original, of course.
Test Track is...
Which is weird because...
Oh, yeah, you go.
They've changed the ride, but have kept the name.
Yes. Oh, right? Well...
Like, the ride's just... it's now presented by somebody else. Yeah. That's the only difference.
It's a very slightly different name. But essentially, I was just about to call it Tron Track. Test Track...
You're welcome.
...is it's the fastest moving attraction in all of Walt Disney World. Surprisingly, because you think of some of the attractions around, but this bad boy's
which it
fast.
Doesn't feel as fast as say, I would say Rock and Roller Coaster feels faster, but I think it's because the difference in acceleration rate.
This has like a really sort of gradual workup. But for those that don't know, Test Track is an attraction at Epcot, part of Walt Disney World. Epcot being one of the most famous theme parks in the world, I'd say, apart from like, you know, your Disneylands and all of that. It sort of falls just outside of that bracket.
It's the most famous second gate in the world, I would say for sure.
Oh, definitely. This is like the one that when you think of like, you know, this is Walt's baby that isn't. They sort of took his...
They like to say that it's his though, don't they?
In all of the promo where they're like, this is Epcot. The idea that I had, and then you guys stole it and turned it into a theme park. But
the experimental prototype community of tomorrow and my ideal vision. I got a rat attraction at the back. I got a Guardians of the Galaxy attraction at the front. This is it. This is my vision for Epcot.
It's what Walt would have wanted. Look, we got to stop thinking, what would Walt do, Luke? He's gone and he's just not ever coming back. So this actually has quite an interesting history. It sort of goes back quite a while. I would say there are sort of inklings around the World's Fair. And then sort of it starts to fully develop in its now iteration, like in its fast moving fun iteration, sort of towards our time. This is about the same age as us.
Yeah, and to me, looking at the history, well, not to me, it is true. This is kind of the start of what I would say is new, in inverted commas, Epcot. This is the beginning of the end of the long 20-minute dark rides to be replaced by 3-minute thrill rides, which is something we obviously see here where World of Motion becomes Test Track, but that we ultimately see it as well when... Horizons becomes Mission Space, and not necessarily as a thrill ride replacement, but a shortening of the ride we see with Journey into Imagination. This is kind of the start of where Epcot has ended up today.
So many attractions at Epcot have just, like, they've got huge amounts of history, even though that park isn't super old. Like,
I would say more has changed at Epcot than has changed at Magic Kingdom.
Mm.
Like, big sweeping changes.
Because I think Epcot is placed in that weird sort of bracket of, you know, what is it? What is an Epcot? Mm. You can't sit down and just go, oh, that's a thrill park, or oh, that's a theme park. It's just this weird amalgamation of ideas that it's like it's a culture park combined with a future technology showcase combined with thrill elements. It's just everything sort of mixed into one, bit of zoo, bit of aquarium. Actually, no zoo, just aquarium.
Aquarium park. Yeah. Which is interesting as well. I feel that we've talked a lot on the channel, and I'm sure we've talked about it on the podcast before, but the whole Tomorrowland problem. But this is half a park of the Tomorrowland problem. It's not just a single land. Literally, half a park was called, and is still called to this day, Future World.
they tried to.
I know they're changing it, but what is futuristic today about Future World? It makes sense. I'm not a huge fan of, you know, World Showcase, World Nature, and World Celebration, or whatever it
is. Yeah.
World Showcase,
World Discovery.
The
Discovery.
World Discovery,
or
yeah, the
like
three
that.
New names. But it makes sense to change it from Future World, especially with the changes the park's seen.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, the Tomorrowland problem is essentially where if you are dedicating an entire land or an attraction on the future, where do you go from there once the future arrives? So you have this, you know, idealistic vision of tomorrow. Think of like what tomorrow was in the 90s compared to what tomorrow is now. And then that's your problem, is that you're always going to be catching up.
Yeah. Think of films like Back to the Future, you know, came out in 1985 and looked forward to the futuristic year of 2015. Mm. And now 6 years after 2015, it looks nothing like that. It's the problem where tomorrow very quickly becomes today and then even quicker becomes the past. And you end up with Tomorrowlands that feel out of date.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the timelessness that Disney especially mostly bases its lands in the past. Adventureland is a timeless concept, but it's still kind of based in that one time period. Same with Frontierland. The Wild West is very specific, set in time. It's never going to change. The future changes so much, you can't keep up with it. We can't realistically look more than a few years into the future and have a genuine idea of what it might look like. Mm. So if we look too far, we have all these fantastical elements that a Disney attraction isn't built to last for a year. It's built to last for 10, 15, 20 years. How can you realistically make a futuristic attraction that's going to stay relevant?
And tying that back into Test Track, you can see what they eventually do is the way Test Track started and the way Test Track ended are two really different interpretations of future. Like there's
same idea, but
yeah, it's the first one, which is this is the idealistic scenario. And then this is the fantasy scenario. And that's sort of what they're doing with Tomorrowland over time is that they're just making it more fantasy. They're grounding the future in this like almost unreachable post-modern movement or ultra-modern with its neon lights, chrome everywhere, rocket ships just randomly spewed about. It's like, this will never happen, but it's kind of cool.
Sci-fi fantasy.
Whereas back in the day, it was just like, everything's white. The people, the buildings.
Go to the moon. Oh, no, people did go to the moon. Go to Mars. Go to...
It was just
Delta Dream Flight,
all
Flight Hawaii,
massively just whitewashed. And then they hit that point where they're like, oh, no, the future is actually brown. And then they went backwards.
The future is chrome. That episode of SpongeBob came out and everything was chrome. And they're like, redo.
We have to redo Tomorrowland. So we'll step back a little bit, I guess, into Test Track's future. This is one that, as we were saying before, sorry, past.
History?
we're going to...
We've got the Tomorrowland problem on the episode.
We're going to go back to the future. pretty much, this is one where, as I was saying before, I've experienced both iterations. The first iteration, I don't know that well. The second iteration, I do know that well because I've ridden it a couple of times. As with yourself, it was there when you were at Walt Disney World. But we'll start with the...
Now, I don't know if this is going to be a contentious statement, but I would say Test Track is the best ride currently at Epcot.
I don't think that's contentious.
I guess the only other real competitor would be Soarin', which is a very different style of ride. And to me, we've said it on the show before, Soarin' Over California is better than Soarin' Over the World, though I do prefer Soarin' Over the World for Epcot as a park.
Mm.
But still, that's why I would say Test Track is the best ride in the park.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I feel that with Test Track, it's got, you know, the most all-round. Soarin' is very much a, it's hard to explain Soarin'. It's not a thrill ride. It's not a flat ride either. And it's not, it's not a dark ride. It's just sort of,
it's not really
it's a really good experience. It's a show.
It's a really good film.
Yeah, pretty much. It's
like a really good 4D theater, essentially.
But it's like, whilst it's really good, I think you're right. I think that Test Track is one of the best attractions at Epcot, or the best attraction. You haven't experienced some of the new iterations of things. They've now got Frozen. Frozen was added after you were there.
Yeah, I haven't ridden Frozen ever after.
I have experienced that. It is the ultimate definition of neat. I'm like, oh, neat. Yeah. This is cool. It's something I wouldn't wait 3 hours for. But when we went there, we went after Illuminations and we got to ride it within like 30 minutes. I reckon it's worth
about that. The level you would say?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting. There's a lot of what I would say is, in inverted commas, what is worth it to wait for certain rides. I could almost give you a time for every ride.
Yeah.
But I kind of also got spoiled for the year where I live there, where I got to a stage where I almost wouldn't wait 30 minutes for anything, because you do the thing where you're like, I can just come back.
Yeah.
I could just come back.
You had the
why would I wait?
You had the annual pass holder problem. Well, you work there, but you had an annual pass as like your part of your thank you for working here present.
the main gate.
But I did the same thing at Hong Kong Disneyland. I'd walk in and I'd walk around the park and be like, oh, well, that attraction has a 20-minute wait. I ain't waiting 20 minutes. I'm going to go do Space Mountain 7 times.
20 minutes at Hong Kong? I don't think any ride's ever seen that.
It was like Chinese New Year. That was around Chinese New Year time where it was really busy. But for the most of the time, it was like 15 minutes for everything. There was one day randomly where Mystic Manor, it had a 50-minute wait.
I didn't even know Mystic could hold such a long queue.
It like goes out. It goes out and around. Oh. It's a really convoluted queue, but it
interesting. Yeah, it worked. I've only ever queued inside the building.
Because you think, like, there's this little sort of courtyard to the left of the entrance as you first go in. So how about we start with the predecessor to Test Track? Because we're never going to do a video on this because it's very insignificant in the grand scheme of things, I guess, for us.
How dare you?
No, what?
Yeah, for us. a giant Epcot dark ride, very insignificant. Though, to be fair, of all the Epcot opening day rides or very soon after opening day, this is the one I know the least about World of Motion.
Yeah.
I know what it's about, and I've seen like 2 pictures of it from a book, like a souvenir booklet that I have from when from like the 90s of Epcot. And I remember there's like a picture of a guy in who's like fallen off a horse or something in mud. That's about all I remember. Like all I know of this ride. It's about the history of transportation. I know that much as well.
Yeah, it's
from like
pretty much
cavemen
like
inventing the wheel to horses to cars to planes to all of that.
It's classic Epcot. It's just like, let's tell a story and then just make it needlessly long. So we'll sort of talk about how Test Track eventually came to be. It was featured, well, originally what came was World of Motion. World of Motion was, as you were saying, the dark ride that came before it. Test Track and World of Motion share the same building. Like, they both have the same exterior. Inside is a lot different. They completely gutted it. But how it started was they built World of Motion for World of Motion. It wasn't like they didn't build Test Track for Test Track. It was factored into this building, essentially. It was.
So have you seen the? I really like the World of Motion. They kind of enclosed it ultimately for Test Track. But it had this cool part where the queue was inside, but one of the parts of the ride, they came out, added a nice little bit of kinetics. But it is just a big circle building. It used to be a big circle building World of Motion, but now it's a big circle building with a track running around the outside.
Even better. So the World of Motion,
and constantly, if you stand under it, you get to hear
So, World of Motion was sponsored by General Motors. It was around for a while. I believe it came with the park, if I remember correctly, with Epcot.
Yeah. I think the only big attraction that we think of early Epcot that didn't open with the park was Journey into Imagination.
Yeah.
And it opened soon after.
Because that was a Tony Baxter ride, wasn't it? And he wasn't, like, you know, around that super early era of Imagineers. When General Motors eventually ended their sponsorship, they were in the process of conducting a bunch of layoffs and cutbacks, forcing the Disney to question whether or not to, you know, do another sponsorship agreement moving forward. Upon deciding to go ahead with another sponsorship, they reapproached GM, and they wanted to construct a new ride, they didn't want World of Motion anymore. They wanted something that, you know, was more representative of their brand. Slow-moving dark rides don't really represent the big brum-brum cards that GM want to get out there. So, the other... one of the biggest problems with this was that GM wanted it to be within the exact same location as World of Motion. And, yeah, they wanted it to be fairly cheap. So, they weren't necessarily wanting it to be a whole new building. So they had the option there that they pretty much went through and gutted it out. But they wanted it to specifically focus on automobiles and it to sort of celebrate just cars. Like, if you think, how do you celebrate cars? Well, let's go through how they're made, how they're tested, and how they get out there.
Yeah.
And that's really what...
And it's very... It makes sense if you look at... World of Motion was clearly about the history of transport. But that isn't necessarily a great fit for a company that's trying to be like, we're at the forefront of transport. Mm. Like, buy our brand new luxury cars. We've got all the mod cons. And come and ride our ride that's about horse-drawn trolley cars. Like, there's a bit of a disconnect between the sponsorship and the attraction, where Test Track, that makes sense as an attraction driven by a sponsorship.
GM, we're right there when the caveman invented the wheel. It made sense for them to move forward to this. So, eventually, World of Motion was closed on January 2nd, 1996, and everything inside the building was removed. Meanwhile, the elevated track that you were talking about, which was going along the outside, was being constructed and behind the building. So, this is the new track for Test Track. This was part of the...
You get to go through a car park.
Yeah.
They build the part where you get to drive through a car park, which is the actual Epcot Center cast member parking lot. Is there any more magical attraction than getting to do a loop around the Epcot cast member parking lot?
Isn't this part of like...
No, sorry. That's the executives of Epcot parking lot. So you're only going to see nice cars there. You might see, you know, a little Lexus... A little bit of a Tesla, maybe? Who knows?
No, I thought specifically this area was just for Chevrolets, like high-end GM vehicles.
So that's the part inside the circle? Mm. So you know how, like, you do a loop and inside the circle is, like, all the GM cars? Mm. So those are sponsored cars, but outside of that is just the cast member executive parking
lot. So if you imagine, like, a bobby pin... Yeah, place a bobby pin on its side. You know how you've got that little bit that juts out at the top? That's basically the track of the exterior part of Test Track. So they were constructing that around the time when World of Motion was closing down. It was sort of like an overlapped thing. They really wanted to just close down World of Motion and start construction straight away. So work outside this building actually began in 1995. So World of Motion was still open. Eventually, they decided, let's open the new attraction, not yet named, 29 months after closing. So, in May of 1997, after numerous...
Sounds about doable. Yeah. Sounds doable to
me. It's 2 years. Around 2 years. That's pretty good. They had numerous problems within this time. As you can imagine, this was new technology that they're working with. They're inventing a whole new ride system that they hadn't really used before. This is what's called the slot car ride system. It's basically, if you can imagine a roller coaster under a track. So you've got like the top track, like a slot car. Underneath the slot track, you've got roller coaster sort of piping, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
So you've got like a chassis holding on to that roller coaster track. And then imagine then poking up through that is a big rod. And then you've got the vehicle on top that like sits on top of the track. So it's just sort of like...
Which uses real tires. Like the vehicle essentially actually drives on the road with the tires. It's just that the motor for the vehicle is sitting below the track, which is very similar. Like this is kind of the... It's not really the next gen, but it's like the sidestep from the Indiana Jones Adventure style of ride system, where that also had a slot car system, but it was more the EMV, which was, you know, tilting on top. The ride vehicle tilts to kind of simulate speed, simulate the movement, where the Test Track ride vehicle was like just pure speed.
Yeah. So that was part of the problems that Imagineers had when coming up with this. So that first problem was they had to overcome what the wheels, you know, were actually doing. Would they be on the track? Would they be off? Would they cause the speed? They eventually ran into a second problem and a more critical issue that caused the attraction to be delayed for over a year. And that was that for test track to run with the highest hourly capacity possible with 29 ride vehicles, which is an insane amount to think, like 29 vehicles in motion on the track.
Which is what we were saying. It is only, you know, a few minutes long, yet they managed to get almost 30 ride vehicles at one time, which still, the ride vehicles only seat six people, so it's still not a huge capacity. It's only 1,600. But for that style of ride, 1,600 is huge.
It's gigantic. So the problem that they had is the original programming for this attraction could only handle six cars over the layout of the ride. Other than that, it would basically just crash.
Only 23 short.
Yeah, so six cars on that would mean, you know, you have three in loading, three in dispatch, and three in unload at pretty much any given time. So that means that that would be like a whole 15 minutes a cycle. It would have the world's lowest capacity. So you can understand why this was problematic. So they
had to fix it.
They needed to bring in a bunch of programmers to fix this. The original software that was designed for it, they just scrapped. They're like, this is not going to work. They brought in these top programmers, and they were able to create a new system that would handle those new 29 ride vehicles. Now, this isn't that they would consistently run at 29. This was their peak capacity. So if you're thinking your Christmas, your summers, all of that, they needed it to run that. You can't have, you know, your benchmark being what you want it to be at most of the time under an average. You need your benchmark to be the top performing, because in software, you can't have it as like a variable.
THC, theoretical hourly capacity.
Yeah.
Something that's never hit, but it is the dream. Like, if every single thing from mechanics to people was perfect, you could run it at that capacity.
Yeah, basically, if you had your A-grade cast members, all guests were completely satisfied, paying attention exactly to the ride, all vehicles were doing exactly what you wanted to. Like, this is literally your robot style, get into the vehicle, sit down, strap in, ready, go. Like, no faffing about, no going, where do I put my bag? And then throwing it onto the track. Like, that's the ideal scenario. Never happens.
Yeah.
So,
I think one of the other interesting things that during this time, this attraction was down for so long, they reopened Horizons. Horizons had closed in 1994, and they were like, so Horizons had closed, and then they're like, okay, time to redo World of Motion. So that closes. And if you don't know, Horizons was where Mission Space is today, which is right next to
Test
Track. It's
basically right next door, one of the other significant dark rides.
And then they were also turning Universe of Energy into Ellen's Energy Adventure.
Oh, no.
So if they didn't reopen Horizons, they would have literally had all three rides on that side of the park closed. So they had so many issues. Horizons reopened for 4 years almost. To just because they were having so much issues with getting Test Track working.
There was literally a sinkhole underneath the traction, and they're like, oh, yeah, we can keep it going.
It's worth it.
We can you know, get another 4 years out of this one. Then as soon as they, like, finish Test Track, they're like, please, this is a liability. So there were rumors floating around at the time that the delay was actually caused by weather. This was one of the few attractions at Disney World that was outside, because Florida...
And closes in the rain to this day.
Florida has rain every day. Like, you go there, summer,
3 o'clock,
winter, it's going to rain and it's probably going to storm. So it's just...
it's just on time, like the 3 o'clock parade.
And you can imagine how difficult construction must be under these conditions. It's understandable that they would be like, oh, yeah, that's expected that it's going to go down. So they eventually got through all of their problems and they were ready to finally open up Test Track. So it went through the standard Disney iteration where they're like, hey, you know, we're kind of done. We're doing pretty well here. What if we just do a little soft opening? And so they soft opened it on December 19, 1998. But, don't know why I said that like that. But they didn't officially open it. You know how soft openings are usually like a week or two? It's kind of like a technical rehearsal.
Essentially, you don't soft open until you know the ride is ready.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Like,
yeah. Something actually really interesting on the topic of soft opening attractions, and we'll get to when Test Track actually opened, and we'll leave you in suspense. In musical theatre, when they actually, they open a show to the public, but the publicity show isn't until like a week or a little bit after there's open to the public. And the reason is because the actors are still sort of getting used to the space.
Generally, if you go see a big, some of the bigger shows will do preview weeks, especially in, you know, Broadway and places like that, where essentially the tickets are slightly cheaper, but you essentially go in there knowing, hey, the cast might not be 100% ready. The scenery might not 100% work. The props, they may not be finished. Like, you know, you go in there knowing you might not have a complete show. And I've seen preview shows before. Usually you do have a complete show and it's good. But there's always that risk of maybe, who knows?
It's basically that soft opening. It's like, look, it's here.
Yeah.
It's ready to go. But we're not 100% sure. Like, there's some things that might go wrong. And I guess it's not really the actors who are having problems here. It's, you know, is the fly rig going to come in time? Is the technology going to work the way we want it to? Is this show effect?
It can also be with an actor. Yeah, with a performer, if you've got a line that you might think is going to get a huge laugh and it doesn't, or a line that you think isn't going to get a laugh at all and it does.
Mm.
Those can change with a full house compared to a small house and those sort of things. So those, there is stuff, and we've done shows before, you don't get the energy until you've got a crowd, for sure.
Oh, 100%.
Like, you can be perfectly ready, but the best show you're going to give is in front of a crowd, no matter what.
Fun fact, I'm actually seeing the first public performance of Hamilton when it opens in Australia. So that's sort of why I brought this up, because I'm seeing it, and then I know someone who's reviewing it like a week later. So, so I could get my review in before them, but I review theme parks, not musical theatre. Because the problem is, a lot of musical theatre, I know people who it's in, and that's just, it then gets mean.
It's weird.
It's,
that's why we never make friends with theme parks, because they're not people.
Exactly. They are just objects for us to review. So eventually Test Track did open on March 17th, 1999. So that's almost 3 months after it soft opened. So you can imagine there were some problems there, but it did eventually open, which is good. Very off track, because it was originally meant to open those, you know, 29 months, which was, I believe...
Oh, here we go.
Oh, you're bringing in
so
dumb
closed
math.
In January 2nd, 1996. What's 29 months from there?
I think I mentioned earlier that 29 months later was May of 1997. That is wrong.
I believe it would be around June of 98.
Okay, so it wasn't hugely off track. It was like 9 months, which is not bad.
Yeah, I guess no, though it could have been technically from the 95 date when they started the outside of the building,
that
29 months, rather than from when they closed World of Motion.
Yeah, because they needed this open.
I believe...
Like, they couldn't afford to have this closed for as long as it was, but just because of all of the limitations in software and all of the problems that they had technically, they had to close it. Yeah. And they had to keep it closed.
Looked like it was originally meant to open in May of 1997.
Oh.
And then opened up in March of 1999, which is 2 years after the scheduled date, which makes it one of the most delayed attractions of all time.
Oh, look, I'm sure Rise of the Resistance is creeping up there.
No, it only opened 6 months after anticipated.
Ah, true. Yeah, so that would definitely make it off track. Oh, get it? Test Track?
No, I guess it's that thing where
off track?
Though I guess, where do you trust? Like, a lot of the time, same with Pandora, they're like, oh, Pandora, that'll be open in 2015.
I meant 2016.
Yeah.
I meant 2017. Like, it constantly is changing nonstop. I guess the difference in this is, this was wasn't, you know, a brand new attraction, but it was replacing an attraction. So the longer it takes to get this ride done, the longer Epcot goes without a major attraction.
Yeah.
And this is, as we're saying, at the same time, they had to reopen Horizons because of this. Like, nowadays, we're like, oh, you know, Epcot Future Worlds, there's not a ton to do. But at this point, there was almost three rides closed at once, like that entire half of the park, if they didn't reopen Horizons.
Well, I guess we'll jump into the attraction after a cheeky quick break. And we are back. So, Luke, we're here. We're at Test Track. It's the 2000s.
We love this little pretend where... Is this our coping mechanism, Dom?
Yes.
We love this little this little bit where we pretend we're walking through a park. And I think it's because you haven't been in a Disney park for 2 years, and I haven't been in a Disney park for 18 months, and we're getting the jitters. We're getting the no Disney jitters.
That's the longest you've ever not been in a Disney park, I'd say, ever since you started going in 2008. Well, it'd have to be up there.
No.
No?
2008 to 2015, that was a dry spell.
Okay, that was a gap.
And then since I worked at Disney, this is the longest dry spell.
And then when you became an adult and you're like, wait, you're telling me I can work in a job and put all of my money towards going to Disney? Well, bloody
who
sign me
kids?
Up.
Who needs a house? Who needs any of that boring stuff? Disney, it is.
Everything comes second to Disney. So we're here. We're out the front of Test Track.
Oh. We're here.
So this is the first iteration of Test Track. We should say, are we going to go through the first iteration, then explain? Or should we go through each part and say how the two parts sort of relate to
Let's
each other?
Let's see how they're different.
I say that we go through and we say how the first part is infinitely better and then say how they change it over to be the second part. Because
okay,
what we're talking about here is Test Track having two parts.
You don't like
parts.
To make the most ridiculous car you can? That's the only good part about the new Test Track. Oh,
that's true.
And,
but you just spoiled the show.
The soundtrack to the new
true.
Test Track. The do 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 do
bum 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 bum
that
bum,
part. Like that's infinitely better than the old one, which I think might have been filmed using drills to make the music. It is like voop, voop,
I believe they threw a garbage can downstairs, and that's the sound. It's like
with a drill running inside it, and that's how they made the original Test Track music.
So outside, you're introduced to this sort of grand, I can't think of it. It's not a dome, a circular facade.
Awning?
And then
now awning makes it not sound that as exciting. It's quite nice. I like the little entrance area. It's got this nice covered awning, which gets absolutely crammed with people anytime it rains.
So let's imagine you're here. You've got the Test Track logo in front of you. It's the first iteration. So everything's yellow and black checkered. You know, like the Test
it
Track
looks
dummy.
Like it's still under construction.
Yeah, pretty much. And so you've got this.
It looks like construction walls, but they're done. That's the ride. That's the style.
That's the
That's
whole
the thing.
And so you've got this big sort of metal awning out the front. It kind of looks like stage lighting. You know, you've got those rigs. They're like just metallic
the
poles. Then you've got the old, I'm going to say cylindrical building that was World of Motion.
World of Motion.
And then you've got the new track, the track which Test Track is on, the iconic namesake Test Track. That's the track, Luke.
The track where they test.
And as you were saying before, every 15 seconds, all you can hear is, and if you stand there, there's like a little sign that says what number vehicle it is, like on a little digital sign. It's just under
the number of vehicles. I thought
no, it's the vehicle number. Yeah. So not how many number of vehicles have gone through. It's like the unique identifier.
Yeah, like if it's number 28 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. So I
wonder if it's. It must be for cast members maybe to be like, oh, when you know vehicle 28 comes past, you're on your break.
Yeah, or it's
you count down the numbers.
Maybe maintenance or something like that. I'm not sure how it's significant, but it's there. So now you've gone under the awning. You've gone under the vroom track. And now you're ready to enter the building. So when you first get in, during the first part of the building, during the first iteration of Test Track, this is like walking through a workshop. This is where they're preparing everything and showing, you know, this is how they test vehicles. And this was pretty true to how they actually tested vehicles. So there were lots of different parts here. And it was cool. Like, if you go back and watch a POV of this, they've got some really cool features. They have, like, a room which is completely soundproof. And that's, you know, you walk through it, and that's how they would test the sounds of the engine.
Hate those. They trip me out, those type of rooms.
Oh, yeah. So, as you...
Like, dead zone, like, dead sound spaces.
So, as you enter the queue, you're in the welcome center, as they call it. It's not a workshop. It's a welcome center that is a workshop.
Oh, it's nicer than a workshop. You're not going to walk on a strewn nail or something. It's a welcoming center.
This is where they show all of the different tests that are performed on vehicles and parts before they're released. Now, the queue end up, you know, wound by different tests for tires, car doors, an anechoic chamber for radio receivers. There was an area for...
That's the chamber you're talking
about.
Yeah,
that was the one I was saying that was like... anechoic.
No echoes. Anechoic. Yeah, it just means no echoes.
Oh, interesting. And then there's an area where they keep test track dummies to be tested. Now, at the end of the queue, there's a group of guests and they would be brought into a briefing room. You're the guest. We're the guests here, Luke. This is
us. The guests.
And we would be shown some more sort of footage of testing vehicles and how everything was performed. So we now...
I haven't experienced this. Was this just a video pre-show?
Yes.
Get in the room, stand there, watch a video.
Yeah, so very similar to Dinosaur. You just walk on in, stand there and go, oh, neat, a video. So this featured Bill McKim, which is the most dude name ever, who I believe was performed by John Michael Higgins. And he was basically going through what was going to happen. There was then the technician, Sherry, and she would bring the test onto the screen and all that. They finally, at the end, announced, hey, yeah, we're going to go through all of these tests, and then we're going to do a surprise test. A cheeky...
I love surprises.
Oh, yeah. I hate them. But this, they put them there. And then a video of a car crashing into a barrier was shown as you were...
I hate surprises now, if that's the surprise.
That was basically what would get you from one part of the other. So they're like, oh, there's going to be a surprise. And then they just show a vehicle crashing. And then like, oh, come on through.
Surprise.
So... Then we go to, that's the original iteration. It's basically a warehouse, and they're just introducing you to this whole concept of testing vehicles.
This is how we test vehicles.
It was very true to life. They actually went to these workshops.
It was a test track.
And they went to the areas where they tested vehicles, and that was the inspiration for this. Iteration two of the queue is basically if you had a bunch of people and said, how would you test futuristic vehicles? In saying that...
But they got those weird cars. They got weird cars. And those, I think, are real.
Yeah.
But when you walk into the building now, I do like the entrance where it's got, like, a giant logo of Test Track. It's got, like, on the awning now.
Mm.
It's got, like, the T, the big blue T for Test Track. And it's got some weird futuristic car out the front that is literally like a car from Tron. But then you walk through the queue, which has got all these... weird concept cars that don't look like they would work. And even if they did, why would you want to drive them? But I guess they're kind of cool. But that's all I remember from the queue, apart from the pre-show, of this ride, aka two weird cars.
So basically...
Is that it? Like, is there more?
This queue, this new queue, it's less about testing the vehicles and it's more about the design of vehicles. So they've completely shifted the sort of... the effect that they're going for. They really want you to get into the whole, like, cars are cool and futuristic. And this is the very start. This is where we draw out the vehicle. And there is this really cool section where they have a 3D mapped sort of model of a vehicle. And they go through and it's like, we start out with sketches. And they, like, sketch the car. And you can see, like, a sort of 2D sketch version of it. And then they're like, we add the details. And then as it goes, and then it sort of goes... And then we get to the final product, so boom, and the car's like there. ready to go. It's really cool.
And then the music goes doo 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 doo
bum 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 bum. I just remember there was a point where I was at Epcot one night. I think it was waiting for you, and you're like, "Meet me at Test Track." And I sat there for like 30 minutes listening to that loop of music that's like doo 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 doo. It's a bop.
I really like that
it's
song.
A good
I don't
song.
Know why.
It's a banger.
I think like that. I think Epcot probably has some of the most modern Disney theme park bangers.
Oh yeah.
Soarin', Test Track, Interventions, like all of these are non-ironically good songs, like bangers.
Oh, including One Little Spark, which is just the greatest song of all time.
I said modern. especially when sung by a humanistic moon. But we haven't talked about the best part.
Oh, yeah. So the pre-show.
Of the new queue.
The pre-show here. This queue, I'd say, is a lot shorter now because they managed to fill a lot of people into a new space. And that's this new pre-show, which is interactive. So there's barely any show element here now. Basically, what you do. If you've got your magic band or your pass to get into park, everything has RFID. You walk into this room.
They can give you a license.
They can, yeah.
I've seen it a very few times because who doesn't have their park ticket? How do you get into the park? Mm. But you can get just a separate card. I do wonder if this pre-show exists at the moment, but
I don't think it would.
I don't know
it's
enough
too
to answer
high
it.
Touch.
Yeah, I'd imagine it'd just be open up.
But basically, you walk into this room and you scan your magic band, and then it's like, hey, make a vehicle. We're going to chuck this on the test track. And you actually make a vehicle here. The thing is, you don't make a good vehicle here. You make the dumbest imaginable vehicle
that's the fun.
Of all time.
No, I think the first time you go on it, you're like, I'm a serious car designer. I watched those pre-show videos where they drew the line and then they did all of this. I'm
going to
design
droid.
An awesome car. So you try really, really hard and your car sucks in all the tests. So anytime from there, you make the most ridiculous car you can and it probably does awesome in the tests.
I love as well, it starts off and it's like, draw a line and this determines your aerodynamics. And like you draw the stupidest line imaginable. And then it's like, oh, calibrating. And it just makes
the same
shape. Yeah. Like everyone just has the exact same shape, but it's like that illusion.
Now you can get that big boxy, like butch car. Like,
hey, boys. It's
like
me.
There's that car. There's like a more sleek car. The big boxy one's so ridiculous. I would usually go for it if given the choice.
Yeah, there's like the one that's like barely a bump. It's basically paper. Yeah. But this is the difference between these two iterations. It's definitely feeding off that whole idea of, ew, people can't watch a video anymore. They have to be using their iPads and laptops and Fortnite. And there's, you know, a person there doing Fortnite dances in the background of the car. That doesn't actually happen. That's just how I imagine.
Design your car. Take the win.
That's how I imagine Disney execs sort of look at it. After that point, it sort of splits off a little bit here. They're very similar.
Which I think we should also mention quickly that the car you design is relevant from here. This isn't just some sort of, you know, you do it for fun, but the car you design follows you through the ride experience. Mm.
So now we're going to go into the second queue. And this is the boring queue because now you're pretty much just waiting to get into the car. There's nothing really to look at here.
Yeah, I forgot about this queue. It is very boring.
It's just walls.
And they like put you in different numbers depending how many people are in your party.
Yeah, so
because it's rows of three. And if you're in a group of three, you pretty much get straight on.
Mm.
If you're in a group of two, you join the bigger queue.
So this is the, because it's one of the weird attractions where it's three by two instead of the usual just like two by two for the vehicle. That's where they have to split you up because often there are odds and evens and singles and all of that. But this is...
Which I don't think we've ever talked about this, but perfect group size to go to a theme park, in my opinion, is six.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because there's never going to be, you know, if there's a group of four, that might sound good, but on Test Track, you might get left behind. Or if, you know, a six what's the ride type that you can't get a group of six? Five across pretty much doesn't exist.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
There you go. There's a hint. Get five of your closest friends and you'll never sit alone on a theme park ride again.
Except for...
I'm sure somebody's going to think of a ride.
I'm thinking like the Matterhorn and Space Mountain at Walt Disney World where, oh, I guess you're three.
Well, those are one by three one by anyway. It doesn't matter. If you had six on Space Mountain, you'd fill up a whole train.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you're onto something here.
So we need to find four friends. We can't just go the two of us anymore. What a shame.
So at this point, we're going to go back in time a bit. We're going to go through the original version of the attraction and how they displayed it. And then we'll go forward.
Ah, warehouse the ride.
Literally. Like, you sit down in the vehicle and it is quite literally doing things like, all right, we're going to go up a hill. We're testing acceleration. Okay, we've done acceleration. Now we're going to test brakes. And just imagine how you would test a vehicle and how you would then put that into a theme park attraction. Boom, that's a ride. You don't even have to really use much imagination. They literally just did what a vehicle would do. So
exactly.
They had all of these, like they had some cool sections in here. They had some environmental chambers where they went through somewhere that was like really hot and they had heat lamps and this was like, oh, it's testing the different conditions. Then there was a really cold area. Then there was the corrosion chamber where they're apparently spraying acids.
Which, let me guess, I don't know about this. Yeah, I was going to say, they just spray you with water, don't they? One of the most classic theme park tricks. I don't think there's a theme park in the world that doesn't pull this at least once in a day. The spray you with water, making you think it's something else.
Gag. It's acid. They do it.
It's someone sneeze. It's Shrek sneezing.
They love their water. It is actually acid because it probably has to be filled with so much chlorine. but
open up.
Yeah, this is basically just follows. Testing the vehicle, like you start off and it's quite tame to start off with. They've just the different chambers, you've got it doing different things. There's an area where they test anti-locking brakes, so that's, you know, the first time you go through and you brake the vehicle at accelerating speeds and that causes you to spin out. And then the next time you go through and they're like, all right, we're going to use the ABS, and then you floor it. And then they go, all right, brake. And it's like, do, 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 do. And so it's like telling you about vehicles and upcoming technology.
It really does just seem like the ultimate version of a car test drive.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where you go to a car dealership and they're like, oh, we'll take this on a steep hill and see how powerful it is. Slam on the brakes and test the ABS. This really just seems like GM going, hey, come and buy some cars.
Well, if you think about the, you know, the inspiration from before, they were just going through a warehouse where they tested vehicles. Yeah. So this is probably all of the stuff that they did. And they're like, we can do that. We can do that. Yeah, we can definitely do that. As all of these tests go on, you then get to a final area, which is, not the final. It's sort of like the final indoor area. And that's the handling test. So this is like, imagine you're going through the hills and it's like a simulated environment. Like, not simulated as in like, you know, wacky 3D shapes. They've just got like 2D trees and little signs and that. It's kind of cute. Like, you're going through a pretend little forest. And so they're like, all right, we're going to accelerate. And you're going around corners. There's lots of twists and turns. They're like, accelerate more, accelerate. You eventually go into a tunnel and it gets really dark. And then suddenly the lights turn on, flashing at you is a truck that you're about to run into. They swerve around it at the last minute and you're like, why is there a truck there?
And you pack it in. Like,
I remember hearing a story that was apparently really terrifying to start off with. And then they had to add like a different way of doing it. It was something like they left the lights on in the final version, because when it was first there, literally you would get right in front of it and it would just go like, boom, and the lights would turn straight on and everyone was like, oh my God. But now they sort of do that
extraterrestrial
thing where they just sort of
truck encounter
strobe the lights. And it's like, beep, beep, beep. Yeah. So it's not as aggressive. Yeah. But after that, you then hit the point where they're like, all right, we're going to reveal the surprise. The cheeky, cheeky, bloody
the
surprise.
The secret test.
What is the surprise? We'll find out soon, because we're going to go back and explain what that all was in the Tron version. Which is basically the best way to describe it. Take the exact same track layout, and add some neon lights.
Oh, I think you're forgetting the most important part of the new track, and that's at the start when it goes, connecting to OnStar. Which is apparently the computer system that controls all these virtual tests that your ride vehicle is doing. Exactly as you were saying, pretty much the same tests. It goes to a part where it goes through a puddle and skids. Then it goes up a hill again, I think, as
Yeah, it goes up a hill.
But as we were saying earlier, yeah, after each of these sections, the cars that are you made earlier get a score.
Yeah.
So you go through, like, and it'll be like hill climbing ability or whatever it is, because it's based off those four. There's like four test icons. It's like efficiency, responsiveness. Is it like acceleration, maybe?
Yeah, there's like speed.
Or something like that.
Speed and acceleration. Yeah. There's like green, red, purple, and blue.
Yeah, and you get like a score for each of those for each section of the ride. And then it gets to the same part. It goes through, instead of the cold chamber now, though, it goes into this, like, aerodynamic chamber where it, like, blows wind in there and it makes it look like it's tracing the aerodynamics of your ride vehicle. And then it goes to the same truck bit, but it's a little less scary because the truck kind of gets drawn almost.
Yeah.
It looks like lasers draw the truck.
So the interesting
thing kind of cool effect, I think,
about sort of this is, like, they did not change the layout between the iterations at all. It is exactly the same technology.
Just the theming is different. Yeah.
So if you imagine the exact same ride, but as we said, add futuristic elements, that is the new iteration of Test Track. And I imagine that's just what they're
going for. There's not that much to talk about because it is the same ride, but now with blue. Mm. It's just blue instead of color.
There is a really cool effect where they're like, sort of entering the handling simulation and all of the trees like appear, but it's like, and they like get drawn in like a 3D space.
In 3D space.
But it's essentially just 2D flats
there's also
with white outlines.
I feel, I feel bad for the poor cast member at the start who has to listen to all day, the seatbelt check is right around the corner. The seatbelt check is right around
the
corner.
Pull on
the
yellow strap.
The seatbelt check.
Pull on the yellow strap.
That's basically what their job is all day. They're not allowed to touch it because it's like they're on a platform and they just look at you, pull on it, because I don't think they're allowed to reach in because it's a safety hazard.
No.
So they just sort of
reaching over.
They're trusting you that you're doing the right thing.
Which the cool thing about this ride vehicle is it is just like a car because you do just wear an over-the-shoulder seat belt. Like, it does feel like a genuine car. It doesn't feel like a ride vehicle.
Yeah. It's just, it's a car. Like, there's, interestingly, one of the most exciting attractions at Epcot is just driving a car that you're not driving. Like, it's just sitting as a passenger in a convertible.
Sitting as, as a computer drives a car for you through a fake environment.
So as you get towards the end, you're now introduced to the barrier test, or in the original iteration, the surprise. Ooh, surprise. Which is just the barrier.
No, it's not called the barrier test in the new one, right? I think the barrier test in the original, it's called like the power drive or
power
something.
Power drive.
Yeah.
It is basically just like the power test. It's like, and it is what it says.
Speed.
You accelerate at a wall at last minute, and then you're like, oh no, I'm going to die. And then the wall the wall separates, and you are then now out in the open. Like, it's a really cool effect. They just go like, whoom, and you're now out.
Right at the last second.
It doesn't.
Have you ever ridden it when the doors have just been open?
Yeah, it's not exciting.
It really removes the effect, yeah. It's a shame.
Because it shows how sort of long that area is. Because it needs a lot of time to accelerate.
To get up to speed.
Like, it gets really fast, and then it goes around a corner, and then it goes really, really fast, and then it goes around another corner, and then it stops. It is, like, it's fast, and it goes through a lot of bank turns. It gets up to 104 kilometers an hour. So about, what a regular car.
Which it doesn't feel that fast.
No.
Like, to me, it does not feel that fast.
I think because it's got the wind barrier in front of you, so you don't have it, like,
yeah, it must
blasting.
Be. When you think of a ride like Superman Escape, it's the same speed, but I reckon Test Track feels half the speed. I guess it is that same thing, that slower acceleration.
Yeah.
This isn't to say it's bad. And you get a mad bit of airtime when you leave that show building and go down that little jump or tries to throw you into the car park. And I think the important part about this to say is this is exactly the same, no matter which part of the... If you're back in time riding the OG version or you're riding the current version of Test Track, this part, the big finale, is exactly the same.
No, no, there's a huge difference.
Oh, sorry. Does it not say OnStar or something?
No, the huge difference is that on the old version, I'm fairly certain the strip was yellow in the center of the track, and now it's blue.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Luke.
That's huge.
Come on.
I'm surprised we didn't do a whole episode, second episode, just on the differences, a part two.
The blue strip in the finale of Epcot. 45 minute extravaganza.
Painted with color ash blue 374, whereas the yellow.
I'll save you from elaborating. So eventually you hit a point where it like slows down. They have a thermal scan on there and it's like, look at how hot everything's gone. Well, that's what they used to say in the original version.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't remember.
Now they don't
part,
say anything, but it's kind of like, look, you can see the heat generated by the vehicle and the wheels and all that. And then
now they just say buy a Chevy.
Yeah.
Buy a Chevy.
In the new one, it just sort of ends. You just like, that was it. Those are the tests are over. This is the winning vehicle.
Get off.
Get off and buy a Chevy. Interestingly, this is like one of the most absurd parts of any theme park attraction I've been in, because the exit for this attraction is huge. It's a massive gift shop. But what can you buy, Luke?
Chevys.
Cars. You can buy
real cars.
You can literally buy cars. And they don't care where you're from. Like, I literally, like, they approached me and they're like, hey, interested in a Chevy? I'm like, I'm Australian. How will I get that thing back? And they're like, oh, we can ship it. And I'm like, what? what am I going to do with this left-hand drive vehicle in bloody Australia?
Give me an Epcot branded car, maybe I'll consider it. Maybe I'd consider it.
I remember there was a point there.
A paint job that looks like Spaceship Earth.
Where, like,
there you go.
If you inquired about a vehicle, you would get a pin. The Tomorrowland movie pin.
Tomorrowland film pin. And the secret little trick, you could just make up as many names as you wanted, no matter how many times you went on that ride.
Oh, yes.
And
I'm
I think it got to
Blominick
a stage once.
Lacey.
The person must have recognized me because they just gave me a handful of the pins.
Well, the thing I remember was that they weren't actually like, they were Disney branded, but they weren't Disney pin trading branded. They were still cool pins.
Yeah.
And they were free.
Well, remember, any pin, you can trade any pin from as a Disney pin trading pin as long as it has copyright Disney, copyright Pixar or something on the back.
Really?
It doesn't have to have the little Mickey. And also, the other thing is, even if it's not, if the cast member likes the pin, they'll probably take it and just keep it for themselves and put a spare on their lanyard.
Don't give away the secrets, Luke.
Like, so, somebody once traded me a Jurassic Park pin, and I was like, okay.
Oh, all right.
Whatever.
Pocket.
It was a little kid. You can't say no to, like, a little six-year-old kid with a lanyard that got a couple of pins, and they're like, oh, please, can I trade?
No. Those are
That's
not
Disney magic. You say... That's courtesy. That's one of the five keys, I'll have you know.
True. Courtesy, Curtis, cucumbers, cats, and caterpillars. The five C's.
Oh, I must have forgotten them since I worked there, but yeah, that sounds about right.
Curtis is a great guy, though. Like, you've got to always. So
he has to be one of the keys.
Pretty much, that's it for Test Track. Like, you exit through this gift shop where you can buy vehicles.
And yeah, well, what does the music sound like in the exit? Does it sound like
there is a much better version of that if you just go on to anything,
actually look it up
wherever you find music,
instead of requiring two people who are trying to avoid getting copyright strikes, so won't actually play the real song, but just make it up. But do listen. That's a good track.
100%.
If we want a pump-up track, pretty much all of Epcot, to be fair, is a good track.
Like one little
there's
spark.
Like a 3-hour
banger.
There's like a 3-hour Epcot park loop that I was listening
the Epcot
to
mega mix
earlier today. It's like, yeah, 3 hours of good, like, working music.
Nice. Well, I think that covers it for Test Track. Do you have anything left to say?
No, I as I was saying earlier, I do enjoy Test Track. I obviously don't know a lot about World of Motion, so I can't say if this is better or worse than that. But I can say it's a really fun ride. It's really unique as well. It's not just another roller coaster. It's not just another... You know, when you think of thrill rides, you kind of think of three things. Roller coasters, drop rides, and then spin and spew style rides. Yeah. This is really unique, and it's great. And they've used the ride system again, but never really for the same thing. This is still quite unique in the world. Closest thing is obviously Radiator Springs Races, but different style, different idea. This, I really like.
Yeah.
Not much more to say.
I really like it
all
as well.
Car ride systems.
It is a surprisingly simple yet complicated attraction. That's, I think, sort of the best way to describe it.
As the 2-year delay would suggest.
Well, that is it.
Though
for...
it does work pretty well nowadays, at least.
Yeah. Oh, it's very efficient. Now I'll actually
Except
say
in
it.
The rain,
oh, no.
As we'll say.
Okay, that is it. For
so anyway, guys, a bit more.
Damn it. Wait. Okay, that is it for Review Time's theme park cast. You can find me at Review Time Dom on Twitter.
You can find me at Review Time Luke on Twitter.
And you can find us both at Time Review on Twitter. Or you can email us. I'm Dom at ReviewTime.com. Luke is Luke at ReviewTime.com. You can also find us on TikTok at Review Time Boys. Oh, and everywhere else is Review Time. Anyway, we will see you all.
Just Google it. You'll find us.
You'll find us. We'll see you all next week, where Luke will bring us a cheeky little secret. Because he probably doesn't know yet. Do you know?
It's the barrier test. No, I do know. We're going to talk about... It's going to be a big episode. A little park that turned 20 years old this week. So make sure you stay tuned for that next week.
Luna Park, Sydney. We're recapping.
Part two.
No, Luke was actually right. It's not Luna Park, Sydney. Anyway, guys, we'll see you next week. Review Time's theme podcast is brought to you by Luke Carroll and Dominic Lacey. A big shout-out goes to our patrons, Jake Cool, Ruben Mays, Jane McRoberts, Peter Matthews, Jeremy Kalfakis, Louis Najira, Luke Shakatano, Ray Dredge, John Madison, Michael Pinn, Janine Kerr, CG Lemonade, Tim Discenzo, Josie McDougal, Stephen Schwarzrock, Matt Sakal, Norman Lacey, Sincerely Mac, Bobby McDougal, Brendan Brown, Martine Lugerison, and to you, the listener. I'm sorry, Martine, I think I just slaughtered your last name. Review Time's theme podcast. We'll be back next week.